Yalu. It's the magic hand wavy thing. It's starting up. I see your papa today.
I this is my I got this was gifted to me for Father's Day.
Very nice. Established 2012.
Yeah, it's
There you
accurate.
go. For a second, I thought it was supposed to be your birth year, and I was like, wait, that's wrong. Then I figured it out.
Yeah, I did
I
not become a
figured it out.
dad at age zero. That's
That's
not,
not how that works.
no, not really, no.
Okay. Shall we hit the button go go?
Sure.
Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, July 3rd, 2026. It's just after 17 UTC as we're starting to record. We're doing this a day earlier than we have usually because tomorrow's July 4th. It's a holiday. I'll be out doing stuff. I don't know if Yvonne's out doing stuff, but I'll be out doing stuff.
Yeah, I got stuff. Yeah.
You got stuff. I know we are both going on as quickly as possible, getting to the National Mall to participate in the, great National State Fair.
The extremely successful.
Yeah, like we have to take part in Donald's celebrations in DC. That's what we're both doing.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Anyway,
Stunning.
we'll do our
Stunning.
usual starting with less serious stuff and then moving towards newsy stuff towards the end. Although honestly, I mean, I'm looking at my list. I don't have a lot this week anyway. I mean, well, there's a, I mean, SCOTUS did a bunch of stuff, but anyway, do you have the fun stuff at the beginning? You have something in mind? You got anything? I got movies. I got my usual
Fun
movies.
stuff. Fun? I don't know. I've been watching a lot of the World Cup, but I don't know.
I am not a sports person, but how's that been going in general? Not any specific sports stuff, but like, has
Well,
it been going well? Is it a
the one thing
disaster? What's
I
going on?
think, well,
I'll
a
tell you
lot of
what my
people
one
thought,
experience I had, I'll give you in a minute, but yeah.
I mean, a lot of people thought it would be a disaster, but it hasn't been. I mean, even though the ticket prices have been outrageous, the stadiums have been packed for the most part. The games have been quite good. A lot of African nations have been making progress that they hadn't seen in the past. The one thing I don't know. It's just somebody was mentioning how no matter how hard Donald or FIFA could have tried to fuck it up, the World Cup is like its own thing. And so the participants really make up the World Cup, and even though they tried very hard to fuck it up, they couldn't. I think that's the biggest conclusion
Okay. Yeah,
from all of this.
the one thing like I did this, and this was a couple weeks ago now, but like I went. So first of all, Brandy got to go to an actual one of the games in Seattle. She did that, and she could have brought me with her, but she knew I would be miserable. I would be unhappy. I would not enjoy it. I would go because I was accompanying her, but otherwise I'd be looking at my phone, I'd be bored, I'd put on like headphones to avoid the noise, and
You know, I would have agreed to go with her. I
Well,
mean, I would have flown. Listen, I got
she
somebody
found
over here
someone
that
local.
flew up to Miami to go to a game, from Colombia. Spent $4,000 on a ticket to go to a game. But well, I will admit that they did
She
get very
saw
good
the
seats.
one she saw was USA versus Australia.
Yes, which was quite a good game. I would have gladly flown up to go see the game.
Yeah. Well, anyway, she got some random
Again, I
local
would have
to
gladly
go.
flown up to go see the game if I would have known this, you fucking asshole.
Yeah, well, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Are you kidding me?
And she got to go to, you know, some VIP events beforehand.
Yeah,
as well.
You asshole. Yeah. Yes, I would have fucking gladly flown up for this. So how about next time?
Well, you're assuming she would have liked to go with you.
Well, that's true. Yeah,
she could have been like, that asshole? Fuck that.
Fair. Fair point. Okay.
She found some random person that she didn't know that she knew.
Yeah,
know,
of course.
Friend of a friend through work or whatever. But now, to be clear.
Literally, I would have flown up for this.
To be clear, she did have to pay for tickets, but she got them at a decent. She wasn't the like super inflated crazy prices. Like there was some sort of deal that she was able to get in.
Well, I mean, there are a number of tickets that were allocated. Listen, the face value of the tickets, while expensive, wasn't as expensive as it's been in the resale market. Right. So, you know, because my friend, if you joined, there were lotteries and there were certain allocations for tickets. Our friend Kathy got to go to one of the games in Atlanta. They got in a lottery, and I know the prices was quite, you know, reasonable, okay, to do that. And I believe my friend that came up from Columbia also partook in that. And they got seats that were very good. But again, they paid, you know, I saw they paid $4,000 for a ticket. However, I saw that in the resale market, you got $4,000 for a nosebleed seat. They got like second row seat to the game for that price. So it really, you know, in terms of value that you got for the ticket, they certainly paid $4,000, but they were the second, you know, they were like right there. It's not the same to pay $4,000 and basically have to get binoculars to see where the fuck the ball is. I don't particularly.
My part of that story is I did not go to the game for the reasons I mentioned, but you know, the Snohomish Podcast Network, which we have been doing stuff with for the last few months, had a booth there, and they had sent out an email a few days before asking for people to like, hey, can you please not at the game? Sorry, they had a booth at a watch party in Everett. Okay, and so we they sent out an email saying, you know, hey, we need additional volunteers to just show up at the booth and have a presence, whatever. So I'm like, okay, I'll show up, and I'll tell you, this was like at sort of a park area by the Everett waterfront. And I was surprised when I got there because there was a freaking line to get into the damn thing. And I'm like, they just have a big TV set up at the front. You know, what the hell? You could watch it at home. Why would you want to be here? And that was my honest reaction. Like I had to wait in line like half an hour to get into the place. And of course, Brandy's like, we had to wait in line a lot longer at the actual game. But you know, I got in, and there are lots of people there. What you know, and it is basically they had like, you know, a giant screen set up with the game being projected on it, and a big field where people could, you know, stand around and watch and bring their lawn chairs and stuff. And then around the edges, they had like food carts and booths from various people and stuff like that. And, you know, it wasn't completely packed, but it was pretty full. And I was, and this is why I didn't go to the game, obviously. I'm like, I have no comprehension why anyone would ever do this. Like, if you want to watch the damn game, you've got a TV at home. Why the fuck would you come to this thing? You know, and you know, I was just baffled. And, you know, I went to the little booth in the back. I didn't actually watch any of the game. I didn't pay attention to what was going on in the game. Every once in a while, I heard, like, people yelling and stuff. And I was like, oh, something must have just happened. But for the most part, you know, I hung out with some of the network people for a little bit and then headed out. But, like, you know, I was there. I actually was present for the entire game. I hadn't planned to be, but I was. But I didn't watch even a single second of it and was just baffled the whole time why anybody would ever do this. So that's my story.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, I can I can almost understand wanting to go to the actual game in person. It's the watch party
thing. I'm going to do an analogy. Okay. You know, let me ask a question. Is watching porn on video or having sex different?
This was still on video.
No, what? Well,
it was a watch party. It wasn't actually going to the game. It was going to a field in the heat bunch of extra people around you.
Usually, like the watch parties, I'm not that big a part. I'm not. Actually, watch parties are fun because one thing is to have people around you reacting at the same time. When something happens at an event and you're not just like at home watching it or like whatever, but a lot of people are sharing your emotions, it actually feels a lot more exciting than you just being at home and watching it. This is not like watching a movie or something. Yeah, I mean, there it's a live event that's happening at that moment.
People say the same thing about movies too. They get the energy from the crowd reacting,
and that's true. And I agree. It's not the same thing just to watch it, you know, at home at the same time as to having the crowd reaction at the same time. That's the biggest factor. Now, to a lot of people, to you, you don't care. But, you know, to most other people,
I will say, to
the non-Spock population, that
occasion when I have gone to a movie in person near opening day, I have enjoyed the crowd reactions.
Yeah.
Like, to a new movie that everybody's seeing for the first time. And I know that this is augmented, I guess, by the fact that I don't understand watching sports in general, but even so, I have the same thing with concerts.
Right.
Like, my wife has learned not to drag me to concerts anymore.
Right.
Because I end up, I'm like, I'm going because you want to be here. Not because I want to be here. I am going to support you and, like, whatever. But, like, she looks at me and I'm clearly miserable. I'm like, it's too fucking loud. Why are people standing up? Can't they just fucking sit down and listen quietly? You know?
Oh my God.
I'm putting on my noise.
I know this because I have dragged you to a concert myself. So I know the experience.
Yes. And I'm like, if you wanted to listen to this, you've got Apple Music, you've got Spotify, you put on the song. What the fuck is this thing? Like, instead, you have to subject yourself to the misery of lines getting in. You're in a crowd. There are fucking people all around you. If you're hungry, you have to get, like, super expensive, crappy food. You know, this is ridiculous. Like, you know, I could just put on the song if I want to hear the damn song.
Oh gosh.
You know?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's not for you.
No, it's not for me. So anyway, I I did not go to the World Cup game, and it was probably better for it. Every once in a while I'm like, you know, it would have been nice to accompany her. And then I'm like, you know, actually I would have been miserable the whole fucking time. And she would have known I was miserable, and that would have reduced her enjoyment of the event. And so it's better this way.
No. I'm fully on board with the fact that it is a good decision for you not to go to the game. I'm fully on board. I mean, yeah. I know you and it is the right call. It's the right call. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
What was not the right call was not to tell me about this fucking game, because I would have gone up there to watch this fucking game.
Okay.
That's the only part that was wrong about this.
I understand. I understand.
Other than that, everything was fine.
Okay. That's good.
So it's just a future reminder.
Okay. You got anything else before I do a couple movies?
Well, I did tell you my little anecdote about the fact of how I cleared traffic exiting the, I told us on Slack how I managed to clear the traffic from the camp exit. You know,
Yvonne was like, yes, somebody did something stupid in traffic, and Yvonne's response is, of course,
something
to scream
stupid.
At them.
They decided that they didn't want to wait, and they decided to drive down the street, they're, you know, driving the wrong way. and block everybody.
Because something was blocking them. There was
a construction vehicle moving slowly, and they decided that they didn't have the patience to wait for a construction vehicle. So in order to solve the problem, they decided to drive down the street the wrong way. Into oncoming traffic. Like a lot of oncoming traffic.
Anyway, Yvonne's response was to yell and scream and curse at them. Right?
Well, after we all sit there for several minutes, and this person will not move that is blocking everybody, I fucking got fed up. And here's the thing about this. And this is my fucking, like, pet peeve about this. It's number one, it starts with the fucking selfishness of our era where somebody believes that they're totally entitled by themselves to pass all the traffic and drive the wrong way in order to get there first because I'm more important than all of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, the Trumpian era in a fucking nutshell. You know, fuck you all. I'm getting mine. Fuck all of you. So we start with that. And then the fact that we are in an era of sheer stupidity where you are the one that's blocking the entire traffic and you don't move. You're like, well, I don't know why this is happening. Fuck! Because you're blocking everybody, you asshole!
Okay.
Yes. And the fact that another thing that happens is that most of the time when this shit happens, what happens now? People just sit around like idiots. They take out their phones. They'll film it. Oh, look at the idiot. Look at him or whatever. It not do anything. No, I did not take out my phone. No, I did not whatever. I fucking lowered my window and told that idiotic bitch to move her fucking car so we could all get on our day. To have her to tell me, oh, you need to chill. Listen, bitch. You're the one that decided to drive down the street driving the wrong fucking way. What the hell did it become cool to drive down the street the wrong fucking way? Can you fucking tell me this? Because I'm trying to figure it out right now.
As I said on Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, Yvonne, you do need to chill.
Now fuck this shit.
Yeah, no, and you're absolutely...
There are 40 people being blocked by this... Sam! There were literally 40 fucking cars blocked by this asshole who just sat there. Let's go on my day. Let me wait for them to move for me. I'm like, why couldn't we be move for you?
Eventually, it would have worked itself out.
No, it wouldn't have. No, it wouldn't have. That's the problem. There's no one. Listen, the only fucking solution to the problem was for her to move. It would have, you know how it would have solved? All of a sudden, everybody would have started honking like crazy, okay? Because it was paralyzed, because it had started happening. It would have descended into fucking utter chaos. And because she would have sat there, because she didn't know, because she seemed like completely incapable of figuring out that she is the one that is causing this, okay? She would have just sat there like an idiot.
Uh-huh. Okay. Shall we move on?
No, fucking.
I'm amused by the whole thing. And I, of course, absolutely would have done what you said. I would have been the passive person that was just sitting in the car and I would wait as long as I needed to wait. And like, I would have been like, listen to my podcast, whatever. And I might have started to get annoyed after a few minutes. You would not have
driven down the street the wrong way.
Oh, no, I would not have done that for sure. I would have been waiting for the construction equipment. As well,
yes.
You know,
just like I was doing. It's a lot of us were.
Yeah, you just, you know, you just wait. Like things happen all the time. You wait.
Yeah, you wait.
Like and to be clear, I'm the one who, if there's slow traffic in the lane I'm in, just goes behind it. I can be behind the slow traffic for half an hour before I realize, oh wait, I could pass them. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm usually patient, and oblivious. But you know, same thing. Okay, shall we now move on?
Yes, let's move on.
Okay, I'm going to do my usual two movies. We are now, by the way, only 10 months behind. We were almost 12 months behind at one point on my stuff. This is from the end of August 2025. So anyway, first movie from 2003, a documentary called The Fog of War. Do you know this documentary, Yvonne?
The name rings a bell, but I don't remember from.
Let me give you one more bit. The subtitle is 11 Lessons from the Life of Robert S. McNamara.
Oh, yes. I did watch this. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, well, yeah. Do you have any memory?
Do you have any memories?
I remember it was quite
it?
Good. And if I remember correctly, this was Bob McNamara and himself narrated this, correct?
I'm not sure if narration is the right word. A good part of it was just video of an interview with him.
Exactly. Correct. Yeah.
So yes, a good part of the movie is him talking.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. This is quite good.
So let me give the one paragraph from the summary.
I know
of
a
just
lot
the
of
beginning.
People. One thing that I would say.
We'll go ahead. Composed of archival footage recordings from the 1960s of conversations with the U.S. cabinet and new interviews with former Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. The Fog of War depicts McNamara's life as seen from his perspective as an 85-year-old man. It is divided into 11 sections based on lessons Morris derived from his interviews with McNamara, as well as the 11 lessons presented at the end of McNamara's 1995 book, In Retrospect, The Tragedy and Lessons of Vietnam, written with Brian Vandermark. Okay, go ahead. Give me your impressions of it first before I talk about mine.
Well, I mean, it was very introspective. I think some people, you know, he took a lot of blame for a lot of the bad decisions that were made. That was my impression that I recall. And he described why, and he talked about the detail about it. And I think that regardless, I think that he tried to hold himself accountable for a whole bunch of bad decisions that he made. He tried to explain why they were made, what the logic behind it was. A lot of people still will not absolve him from the egregious things that happened. Despite that, and I don't know, is it? I think he did talk about being about that at some point during it because I watched it a long time ago.
Yeah.
But he realized that a lot of people wouldn't, and I think he was okay. If I remember correctly, he was okay with that. But
yeah, I mean, look, this was basically part of his process of trying to make peace with what happened. Which included, like you said, him realizing that a lot of mistakes had been made.
Yeah.
Now, part of it was still like, hey, we made the best decisions we could at the time. Some of them turned out to be wrong.
Right.
But, you know, and it was trying to, yeah, it's one of these things, it's trying to, in some degree, rehabilitate him from what had happened and the negative stuff from there. It's one of those things. Do you forget if the person does all kinds of things that were really bad, but later in their life is sorry? How do you end up feeling about that person in balance, right? You know. And you want to take into account the fact that they have some regrets, but at the same time, they did what they did, you know, and how do you balance all these things off against each other? And there's also the difference, you know, there are people who, I mean, look, there's three types of paths here. There's the people who do bad, evil things and never regret it at all and are proud of them, right? There are people who do the things and then later realize, oh, crap, I did things that were bad and I'm sorry. And then there are people who actually spend the sort of second half of their lives trying to make up for it by doing other things that are good. I think McNamara is in that second category. And, you know, maybe given the ages he was and everything, that's what was available to him. But it's not like the post-Vietnam part of his life was full of doing good for the world, right?
Right.
You know, so I don't know. And look, let me give you the lessons that the film was organized into, because I think those are Some of these, you look at the headline at least without going into the details, and it's like, oh, okay, maybe not all of them, but okay, here. Lesson number one, empathize with your enemy. And I think that just within the last few weeks, we've talked about this with regard to Iran.
I think it's a critical, I mean, look, that was a critical lesson that we still, well, the Trump administration failed to grasp. I think that we've done, we've done an uneven job of administrations in past decades of absorbing that lesson. Some have done better than others related to that.
I mean, the bottom line, though, I mean, and
but this administration
not...
is well known for its lack of empathy. So therefore, it's that's like that word in this, that for MAGA is really like
it's evil.
Like it's yes, correct. It is like, absolutely evil. And we're not exaggerating
was it Peter Thiel that said like empathy is a disease or whatever?
Something like,
you know,
I think it was Musk. Okay. One of those guys.
Yeah. It's not like they don't talk to each other.
But this is a belief amongst these people that empathy is some kind of like disease.
It's a problem that has to be stamped out.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just fun. And like, look, it keeps coming up like it's a new revelation. But I mean, honestly, people, I mean, is this in Sun Tzu's Art of War as well? I mean, this goes back like this is not like a new revelation. The fundamental is like if you are in a conflict with somebody, to most effectively deal with that conflict, you have to understand where they're coming from.
That's right. Put
yourself in their shoes and think about, like, if I was them, how would I be reacting?
Right.
Now, there are two things. One, even if your ultimate goal is to win and crush the other side, this still helps. But also, if both sides are being empathetic with each other, you may find out that you have
a lot more in common than you think,
and you might be able to solve the problem without a war.
That's right.
You know, lesson number two. Rationality alone will not save us. McNamara emphasized, I'm not going to read all of these, but basically the bottom line was he said it was luck that kept us from having a nuclear conflict after like the Bay of Pigs and stuff like that.
Right.
And, you know, that it's not just rationality. There are other factors at play. Emotions matter. Luck matters, you know. And so, you know, you have to. You can't just think your way out of everything. These other factors are important, and they really are. Okay, number three.
Yep.
There's something beyond oneself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Duh. Okay. This lesson refers to his private life.
You say that, duh. I mean, have you looked at our current president?
I know.
I mean, it's not as much of a duh as it seems like it.
Well, and you know, he actually put it further. There's something beyond oneself and a responsibility to society. He was specifically talking about don't neglect your family, because apparently this was something he did. He had, there's himself, his career, but also as a public servant, he was like, I have to do XYZ because the world needs me and whatever. And apparently he neglected his family and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's... No, your family matters too.
Yeah.
Number four, maximize efficiency. Okay. Yeah. So apparently one of the things McNamara did was he brought some rigor to how the Defense Department was doing things in terms of, hey, let's actually keep track of all the equipment we use and how we use it and what's effective and what's not, and then base further decisions based on those metrics, which, okay. I can't argue that makes more sense than just sort of winging it and doing what you feel like, you know, it's, I'm fully on board with like measure things and see what happens. Of course, in this case, they were measuring efficiency of killing people and stuff like that, but what, you know, okay. And also I'd add to that, you know, again, talking about Iran recently, efficiency in killing people doesn't necessarily translate into your strategic objectives either.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
Okay. Number five, proportionality should be a guideline in war.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think this is has, for the most part, been a consensus in the post-World War II era.
Yeah, but well, of course, except, like, look except, at Israel.
I was about to say, fuck. Except look at Israel. Yeah.
Fuck.
I mean, there's no proportionality there.
At all.
And as recently as the last few weeks, you had one of the cabinet, I forget which one, talking about Lebanon and basically saying the whole country must burn. And for every one Israeli killed, you know, thousands of Lebanese must weep, you know, things like that. This is not the, I mean, I guess 1 to 1,000 is a proportion, but it's not what we're talking about. Like it's, you know.
Yeah.
A relationship to proportionality should be a guideline is just a fundamental notion that your enemy are people too.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. Number 6, related to maximize efficiency, get the data. Okay. Number 7, belief and seeing are often both wrong. And this was in relation to the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And the quote was, "We see what we want to believe."
Mm-hmm.
And so basically this is a warning to, like, you know, don't just go with the easy interpretation that validates your prior assumptions.
Yep.
Dig a little deeper.
Yep.
And a lot of these are related to each other. Number 8, be prepared to re-examine your reasoning. Obviously related to the last one, you know, the quote here is, if we can't persuade nations with comparable values of the merit of our cause, we better re-examine our reasoning. And this was in the case where the U.S. was going it alone in some areas, and some of the allies were like, nah, that's not a good idea. And we just kept barreling on. Again, parallel to what's going on right now, like, there's a lot of things where the U.S. is going it alone, and all kinds of other people are like, are you out of your freaking minds? Possible time to re-examine. Of course, again, this administration doesn't re-examine. Now, number 9 is a little controversial, perhaps.
Yeah.
In order to do good, you may have to engage in evil. And he says, recognize at times we have to engage in evil, but minimize it. And this sort of reminds you of Dick Cheney's remarks after 9/11 about having to go into dark, secret places to react to this that, you know, ended up with, you know, torture and rendition and all kinds of things that in the end weren't really effective, but caused a lot of damage. And you can argue that, I mean, like, on a pure utilitarian basis, you know, sometimes this is true. Like, you're trying to minimize overall damage, but in the process, you have to do some damage. But those end up being, frankly, they're really hard ethical quandaries in some of those cases, you know? And, but, you know, I see where it's coming from, and I see where, you know, for instance, if you were just in a complete pacifist, I will never hurt anybody no matter what. Well, the people who are willing to do so will just take over everything, you know? And so it's, I don't know, but that one's a tough one for me. I don't know. Any thoughts on that one?
I mean, it's a tough one. I mean, I think it's related to, sometimes it's like, you know, peace, you know, you may try to be peaceful all the time and you want peace, but sometimes you have to use force to defend certain things, no matter how much you want. So I think maybe the way that he framed it isn't the best, but
like, because maybe if it's done for the greater good, it's not really evil in balance or whatever. Like, yes, and he's not, I mean, obviously the simple example is you killed a lot of people. You killed a lot of innocents in Vietnam, you know, and that's what's his mind. But
here's the one thing. I don't think that works as a valid defense of anything that happened in Vietnam. because all the things, you know, I think that that may be in some other cases a valid defense. Not in that case.
Okay. Moving on. Never say never.
That's one that it's true.
Yeah. And number 11, you can't change human nature.
It's very hard. Yeah.
Yeah. And in this case, he talked about how many things become clear only in hindsight. And this was where I was saying, like, hey, he was trying to justify a bunch of things of like, hey, we made the best decision we could at the time. I think the reason to flip that on its head is there were plenty of people who knew it was a mistake at the time, you know? So anyway, but that's it. In terms of the movie itself, I'm not going to give it a straight up thumbs up. I felt like it was somewhat self-indulgent in the way the movie was.
That's been one thing that that what you just said is something that has been repeatedly a theme about that. People have said that it's a self-indulgent.
I guess it serves its purpose for him trying to justify himself. But at the same time, I'm like, if you really wanted to get insight into everything, you'd be better off with sort of an impartial third party talking about it. However, principals talking about their own experience has an important part in the story as well.
100%. And look, I am not going to, I think that there is a certain important value in people doing critical self-assessment.
Yes.
And a lot of the stuff that he talked about was very critical of himself and how he did. This was not exactly, I think some people's self-indulgence, I mean, shit, he really.
It's better than not doing it. Well, like lots of people,
that makes it sound like it's the minimal thing. No, I think there's a lot of, listen, most people resist doing this in depth. This is what I will say. Very few people will go into critical, important decisions they did and critically evaluate themselves and impart that much criticism of themselves. I tell me which fucking president of recent times or which key decision maker that we've had in recent times went to that level of detail to self-criticize significant parts of why he did certain things. I think that the thing is that a lot of people saw it like somehow this is some kind of like, I mean, exercise in like him trying to seek redemption. And that's...
Well, and to be clear, he did highlight things he thought he did right as well.
Yeah. But. Yeah. But again, most of it was really, if you look at through those lessons, I think that more than half of it talks about how they fucked up.
Mm.
I mean, think about it. You know, not seeing things clearly, proportionality, empathy, all those things.
Yeah. Anyway, he
was pretty hard on himself. I think that's the one thing that I think people see as a tradition. I saw him like really as being very hard on what he did, harder than most people are on themselves.
That is probably true. And I think I've read just generally the theme of, you know, he spent a lot of, again, he spent a lot of the rest of his life apologizing for things. But, you know, okay. My final thumbs direction is between a thumb sideways and a straight thumbs up. So, and honestly, our conversation has shifted that. I was going to just give it a straight up thumb sideways when we started, Yvonne, but through this conversation, a little bit higher than that. And so again, that's from 2003, The Fog of War, 11 Lessons from the Life of Robert S. McNamara, the documentary. And there you go. And we spent a lot of time on that, so let's spend a lot shorter time on this next one, because I believe it deserves a lot shorter time, because going through this series that I don't really like, but because I started it, going through the whole stupid series, from 1985 National Lampoon's European Vacation.
Talk about a change in pace.
And by the way, I watched this the same day as The Fog of War. Anyway, I think my intro gave this away.
Let me guess. Thumbs down.
Yeah. I mean, I might be slightly more generous and give it this between sideways and down, just because I really reserve straight thumbs down for the worst of the worst. But yeah, no. I said before when I talked about the original Vacation movie, this is just not my kind of humor. I just find it stupid, not particularly funny, actually somewhat boring. You know, I recognize when they're making a joke, but I just sort of like, for anybody on video, you could see my face. For those on audio, I'm just sort of shaking my head and. Like, what was that? And it's not that, they're not some comedies I like. No, I just don't like this kind of comedy.
I'm going to tell you that out of the three Vacation movies that remember, which is the original one, the European Vacation and Christmas Vacation, I would say that this one was by far the worst.
Okay.
By far the worst. The best one actually being the Christmas Vacation one. Which was the third.
So I will let you know, I'm not going to give reviews of them later, but if we fast forward up to the current time, mm-hmm. I have now watched, I should have brought this up, the full series or whatever. Hold on, so I can get all the names. Bringing them up. Okay. To bring us up to the current moment. The original Vacation, European Vacation, Christmas Vacation, Vegas Vacation, and Christmas Vacation 2. I've watched all of those at this point, which means the only one we have not seen is the 2015 Vacation. That's sort of, I gather, a reboot of the whole franchise. And I'm not sure. Like, they are all sort of an nearly equal level of bad to me. I actually, like, Vegas Vacation wasn't that long ago that Alex and I watched it, like within the last few weeks. And I'll actually say, within gradations of bad.
Oh, I forgot about Vegas. Oh, shit. Vegas. Okay. Yeah, I forgot that.
I actually thought within gradations of bad, Vegas Vacation was slightly less bad, actually. But they're all bad. I didn't like any of them. Okay. And when you're trying to judge movies against each other with, like, you know, how bad is it? It's a hard judgment call, you know? Anyway, like, and again, I know some people really enjoy this kind of stuff, but I think there are two factors at play here. One is how do they age? Because European Vacation was 1985, so we've got a lot of time elapsed and lots of things just don't age well. And then it's just like type of humor. And again, this is just isn't my type of humor. Some people really love this kind of stuff. It's just like joke after joke after joke, a bunch of stupid, gross-out stuff, a bunch of physical stuff, a bunch of, you know, random sex jokes, you know, things like that. And it just does nothing for me. That's the bottom line. Anyway, that's all I got to say about that. Would you? Yeah, you said this is the worst, so I presume your thumbs down as well.
This is a good.
Yeah, you're not going back and picking that up as soon as you can.
No.
Okay. Let's take a break and then come back with a little bit more newsy, a little bit more serious stuff, and all of that kind of stuff. So, here comes a break. Okie dokie. Here comes.
It is just my internet being stupid.
My internet being stupid is a new song we will make.
Oh, I'm tired. What's wrong? I'm really tired.
You. It's amazing
to get the show on the road.
There's a road? There's a road? Oh my God! There's a road.
Okay, we're back. So Yvonne, where do you want to start on the more serious newsy stuff of the week?
More serious newsy stuff of the week. Let me see. Where do we want to?
Tough choice.
How's the state fair going? How's the national celebration of 250 going? Is it going great?
You know, I mentioned that at the beginning of the show, and I don't know. Does this even qualify as the more serious stuff? But okay.
It is. Look. Yes, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I have some memories of our bicentennial celebration.
Okay. And we were both like 5 years old.
Yeah.
Approximately.
Look, you know, people were really very into that celebration. And, you know, this has been one of the least celebrations I've seen in a long time of something major. I mean, Sam, the mall was empty. Just this stupid fair. I mean, I don't care, even if, you know, Trump, people are like, they're not.
Well, look,
there's nobody going.
Here's the fundamental thing. And this, look, completely aside from policy things, this is something that Donald Trump does repeatedly that results in this kind of thing. Like, because he explicitly turned it about himself, okay? Like, there was a committee that had been working for, like, the last decade on planning for the 250th anniversary and doing commemorative events or whatever. And soon after he got into office, Donald Trump said, oh, screw that organization. We're going to set up our own. And then, you know, focus a lot of things in a much different way. So like when we had a whole, you know, remember there was going to be a concert series and all the artists ended up backing out when it became clear that it was being promoted as a Trump event, not a national event. And look, you are in Washington, D.C., one of the bluest places in the fucking country, okay? And so, like, if you're going to pack crowds in, a significant number of those are going to be locals. And look, locals in D.C. don't usually spend a lot of time at the mall anyway, just like locals in New York City don't spend their time in Times Square. Statue of Liberty.
Right.
Those are tourist places. But nevertheless, like if you're going to do the big fireworks or stuff, you know, people are, you're going to want local people and you're going to want, like, if, and I say this, but it's something that Donald Trump has over and over again proved himself unwilling to do. I was going to say incapable, but let's just say it unwilling to do, to really make it not focused on him and his policies and Republicans or whatever, or even like, you know, culturally coded right-wing stuff. You know, like most presidents of either party, if they'd had this anniversary happening on their watch, would have made the whole thing a celebration of everything American.
Look, I just pulled this up just to give you some perspective on participation in the celebration. You talked about, you know, about what happened with, you know, why people local don't show up, blah, blah, blah. But look, in the bicentennial, instead of Trump doing his own Trump-style celebration, the Smithsonian is the one that did a Smithsonian folk-like festival on the National Mall in D.C.
They're the ones who were planning, you know, there was a similar plan for a Folklife Festival, bringing festivals from all over the country and having them do their little mini versions of themselves. Right. That was the plan for 250 as well.
Right. But of course, you know, Trump, you know, took it away. And so instead of that, we got this ridiculous thing. But look, that bicentennial celebration had 4.5 million people participating in just over 10 days. 4.5 million people. And Sam, we've got nowhere even remotely, like, if we got 100,000 people, it's a stretch that have been there.
Many of the pictures that you've seen of acts going on have had more people on the stage than in the crowd watching.
Than in the crowd. Correct. Yes.
You know, and Sam,
we had we had 4.5 million people participate in 1976.
People have pointed out that looking at these pictures of the National Mall during this event, there are actually less people there than on a normal summer weekend.
Exactly.
Which means not only are people not coming, people are actively avoiding it.
This is how toxic this guy is. And not even, you know, I would think, well, his diehard supporters are going to show up. But guess what? Those guys in the past never took part of any of this type of shit anyway.
Well, I wouldn't say never.
They weren't the ones that were inclined to be really...
No, but look, there has been a real drop-off here. During the prime, like 2016, before his first term election.
You think if this was like the 2016 version of him, they would have packed the National Mall.
Back in that time frame, you were packing MAGA rallies all the time.
That's
all over
true.
The country.
And now he can't, like, fuck, he can't fill a damn movie theater right now.
Right. And because people, you know, like, look, we have had, people are tired. We've had a decade of this shit.
I mean, it's not the same. It's not even the same shit. If he was able to even at least bullshit like he did 10 years ago, it'd be okay. Right now, he is a blubbering, incoherent mess. He's talking like about imaginary conversations with dead people right now.
Well, just to be clear, the Teddy Roosevelt thing, there's been video released. He did speak to an AI hologram of Teddy Roosevelt as part of the opening of the Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library. So when he talked
about speaking to Teddy Roosevelt
this week. He made those comments like right around when it happened. So he said,
okay,
he was
Sam, but because I talked to an AI avatar of you, that doesn't mean I talked to you, Sam.
Well, close enough. Come on.
God.
Anyway, but so just to be fair, and there is video of that. You can go see the video of Donald Trump talking to Teddy Roosevelt.
Okay, but he didn't really talk to Teddy Roosevelt. He talked to AI. You know, maybe we need to, I mean, now that I'm thinking about this, maybe we need to leverage this somehow.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we present some AI of some historical figure that he respects and tells him to go resign or something. I don't know.
Well, it's been brought up for a long time that, you know, one way to get out of this whole problem is to set up a Truman Show scenario for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It seems that based on what just saw, that this is a distinct possibility.
You know, and for anybody, another movie, Truman Show, was basically there's one guy and they make this sort of artificial city for him and he doesn't know it, but his whole life is a TV show. He's always on camera. He's being broadcast live. People are watching what goes on with his life. Everyone around him are actors. You know,
hired
to play his family, his coworkers, whatever. And which, by the way, if this was happening to you right now, how would you know? You know,
I mean, I guess I wouldn't. Right.
If they did it well enough. I mean, he in the movie, he eventually found out because one of the stars fell out of the sky and turned out to be like a light or something.
Right. Right.
You know, but anyway. No, look, the whole thing, It's because anything that he does becomes hyperpartisan that you're not going to get like the everybody shows up to it because...
Well, it's because it's not done for the nation. It's done for himself. I mean, he even posted a picture that was like preposterous online of it. Like he posted some fake AI picture showing the festival all full of people and they all had like there were Trump logos everywhere.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, very clearly makes it not the celebration of the country, the celebration of me. Yeah, he posted this on Truth Social. It's just absurd.
Well, you know? And again, and participants in it, like all of the big headliners, even the first thing they announced was a bunch of B-listers. But then even the B-listers like pulled out.
They were like, yeah, exactly. Now we're like with the who the fuck is showing up list. By the way, the picture also like has repeated logos of the Trump Travel Agency for some reason.
Okay. And look, so we get no big headliners showing up. You get certainly no one center or left is going to show up to this thing at all because it would be seen as supportive of Donald Trump. Unless they're going in order to make fun of it or report on it.
Right.
And as we said, even his supporters think it's kind of lame and aren't coming. Right. And his support and his level of support is way, way down because of how the economy is doing and everything else. And so we have what we have. And meanwhile, there's this whole state fair thing going on. We are recording this on Friday, July 3rd. Tomorrow on the 4th, they are going to have a fireworks display that lasts almost an hour. It's going to be it's like 45, 50 minutes, something like that.
Okay.
With apparently more fireworks set off at one time than, you know, they're trying to set records, right? I don't know how it goes. I'm sure there have been bigger somewhere at some point. But I've seen people posting about the expected pollution levels in DC from this thing.
I mean, that is like a thing with
astronomical, you know.
I mean,
and
maybe he'll choke him to death.
Well, and I was going
to
mention
that would be hilarious if he was able to choke. If he wound up choking himself to death on the fireworks display that he sets off, that would be like one of the most hilarious outcomes.
Well, the other thing is the expectation that it's going to be over 100 degrees in D.C. on the 4th. And he's planning on giving, one of his really long outdoor speeches,
And I really am all for it. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, somebody should tell him that Obama's longest speech outside was in a day like that, and he wore a parka. And did not drink water because water is for sissies.
Oh, right. Right. Okay.
I mean, so he can break that record.
And by the way, it was 6 hours long.
Yes.
No.
Yes. Yes. Because somebody tell him that was Obama's longest speech so he can like.
Well, people keep bringing up the William Henry Harrison comparison. But I found out through people commenting on it that William Henry Harrison gets a bum rap. So the notion, he is, by the way, the president who was president the shortest amount of time. It was like 31 days, something like that.
Okay.
And the story goes that he insisted on giving his inaugural speech without a coat, outdoors. And of course, this was, it was a snowstorm. It was cold. It was whatever. And basically, he caught pneumonia and died. And that's the story.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, the reality is, and it was even reported at the time, he caught pneumonia and died. But people have gone back and looked at the actual reports of the doctors involved.
Yeah.
And they did label it pneumonia at the time. But if you look at his actual symptoms over those 31 days, They don't align with dying of pneumonia. And instead, it looks like he suffered from something that actually presidents of the time often suffered for, which was the water at the White House was contaminated.
No. And
he ended up getting one of the waterborne, like, intestinal diseases and, like, you know, basically died of that. Now, they couldn't determine for sure exactly which species of bug caught him or whatever. But fundamentally, the problem was, you know, we didn't have a good water supply and it was contaminated and he caught something and he died of that. And of course, medical technology at the time, they didn't know how to treat it. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to, like, filter the water. I mean, whatever, you know, you drank what you drank and what happened happened. And anyway, but apparently it wasn't because he went out in the cold. But people have been making the comparison anyway and saying we could have a hot version of that. And I don't know.
Well, I just look, but it's not that he's going to die of a disease, but we could, you know, he might become seriously dehydrated. Heat stroke. Be such a shame.
Yeah, I hear you. But I presume they're going to keep a good eye on him. They're going to spritz him down with water. He'll have stuff to drink.
Well, listen,
they'll probably, even though it's outdoors, put it in an air-conditioned tent. I don't know.
Listen, you keep saying that. You know, look, you know he doesn't listen to anybody.
Yeah.
So he'll do whatever the fuck it is that he feels like it.
We'll see how it goes. And if anything like that happens, there will be an amendment to this story, because I'm probably not putting out this podcast. We're recording on Friday. I probably won't put it out till Sunday, maybe even Monday. We'll see how it goes. But, like, yeah, I will amend this podcast if something significant happens to Donald Trump's health as a result of him giving his speech in 100-degree weather. But we'll see. You know, we'll see. Anyway, anything else about that? Like, it seems like, I don't know. It's just, like I said, of all the, this is like, and this is the world we live in right now. We've got serious things like Iran and SCOTUS and all this kind of stuff. But there's also a constant barrage of stupidity, like the state fair, the reflecting pool, the Kennedy Center, the new Air Force One, you know, all of this kind of stuff, you know, is just, it's constant and it's nonstop. And you can't ignore either side, right? I mean, there's the serious long-term things that are damaging to the country that are happening. And then there's the nonstop barrage of stupidity. And they're both, it's not that they're both important, but they're both critical to understanding the national moment, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
That is the main thing why I brought it up, because it's the worst, one of the worst fucking celebrations that we've ever done for anything major. You try to tell me, when the fuck as a nation have we tried to celebrate anything that has looked as pathetic as this? Yeah, exactly. And, maybe, you know, to top it off, beef is at a record price right now.
Okay. Yep.
Which makes it that the 4th of July grilling season is, they said that demand hasn't gone down. But look, if people are spending that kind of money on beef, you know, they got to be cutting back on something else, because the beef is at record levels. Gas is, it's down from its peak. It's down a little, but it's not back to where it was. So gas is also expensive. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, people are miserable, you know? The war's really not over. I don't know what the fuck they're doing over there.
Well, you know, probably, well, one statement and then we'll move on. They're probably just trying to, like, keep the status quo until after midterms. That's the bottom line. An occasional, like, little, you know, we shoot them, they shoot us for, like, a little bit, and then go back
to
normal.
So he's not
going to
sign an official deal until...
I don't think the damn thing is going to happen until after midterms. They're just going to, there was that 60-day deadline on the current memo of understanding. It'll get extended two or three times, however much it takes. We will basically be in the same situation we are now until December, or at least mid-November.
Sounds fantastic.
Okay, I was going to say, to wrap up the 4th of July celebration stuff, maybe whoever's next will decide to just do a makeup event for the 253rd and say, okay, the 250th got screwed up. We're going to do the 253rd and make it an all-out blowout to make up for it and do it right.
Right. That would be something. Yeah.
You know, 253 is not like a big round number or anything, but, you know, you can pretend. You know, maybe for the 253rd, it can be a celebration of adding a few states. You know?
Could be.
Like, well, you know, because traditionally new states actually officially, like, joined on the next 4th of July after it was all ratified and stuff. So if you want a crowd for a 4th of July celebration in D.C., make it the day D.C. becomes a state. You will get that fucking crowd.
You'll get a big, you get a huge crowd. That's for sure. Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. Let's take a break. And did we already took one break. Let's take a break and then we'll come back and I'll pick a couple things to talk about, I guess. So here we go.
No, I don't like that either. Once upon a rainbow, you were on the floor, eating the bugs that you found upon my face.
No, what? What?
Bye.
Okay. So, getting a little bit more serious, we did have a bunch of SCOTUS results
this week.
So, and I, you know, I should have taken the opportunity during the break to bring up a list of them so I'd have them handy. But no, I did not. Let's, the one that got the most headlines, it's not necessarily, there's another that might be even more impactful, but let's start with the birthright citizenship case.
Mm-hmm.
We had officially a 6-3 ruling that said, oh yes, in fact, the Constitution says what it looks like it says. Well, let me back up. The 6-3 ruling was keeping in place birthright citizenship, period.
Gorsuch, five justices says that
it was constitutional.
That's what the Constitution.
Gorsuch specifically said he didn't think there was a constitutional issue here, but there was a statute that did this, so Congress could change it. So it was 6-4 officially, but 5-4 on the constitutional issue, and even then, you know, there was some disagreement on the rationale and reasoning and blah blah blah. People pointed out, look, the real headline here is not that this survived. It's how close it is to not survive.
Well, this should have been 9-0. This is ridiculous.
Yes. This is what a plain reading of the words kind of thing. And you have, like, people who consider themselves originalist who are like, well, no, we're not gonna look at the congressional debates that led up to this, the 14th Amendment, we're going to look at the plain text and say, well, but they couldn't have actually meant that. So we're going to do this.
That's the thing that really pisses me off, because the plain text is very clear. And these guys, it doesn't mean that.
Right.
And I'm like.
And this is, again, it's just a very, very close thing, and which it's close enough that you know they're already teeing up to try again. You know, next time they have an opportunity. There were rumors that Alito would retire today as we're recording it. I don't think it's happened yet, but there were rumors. NPR mistakenly posted a pre-written article and then took it down within like less than 10 minutes. And so that sparked a lot of speculation. It's been speculated anyway. But if we get this, Trump's going to get to appoint somebody else. Of course, Alito was one of the three that were most core on this anyway. All you need is one of the liberal justices, or even one of the wishy-washy middle ones, to get replaced by a new Trumpy, young MAGA person, and they're where they need to be. You know, like, you know, something bad could happen to one of the liberal justices at any moment. They could get hit by a car. You never know. You know, so it's 6-3, like. Especially like we've gotten used to 6-3 opinions on all kinds of stuff at this point. But again, there's sort of the expectation. A lot of people thought this would be 9-0, but no, it was not.
I mean, yeah, but the guys on the right wing were raging, saying all sorts of unhinged shit that's. They were just saying all sorts of unhinged shit. But I guess the one thing is that on the counter, I saw a lot more people also basically saying after this list of decisions and a few other things that happened, campaign finance and other things that were decided.
Yeah, we'll talk about some of the others in a second.
That, you know what? Fuck it. We have to, if we don't go scorched earth when we get control of this, basically by trying to either pack this court, do something, whatever, to just undo this, then we are failing. We need to go. We need to absolutely go scorched earth against all of this bullshit. Period.
Yeah, and I definitely do see growing support for this. You would need a trifecta. You need the House, you need the Senate, and you need the presidency. So it's not happening this year. And even if the Democrats manage to get the Senate, which is still it's within the realm
it's
of possibility,
reach.
But it's within reach, but it's not like, oh my God, that's
not guaranteed.
Happen.
Yeah, but it's in reach.
Yeah. And the most recent polls I've seen on Senate races still show like the most likely outcome is still the Republicans retain the Senate barely. Okay. But you need all three. So the earliest you're talking about is 2029. Right. And then you would need majorities in both houses of Congress and without like swing voters like Manchin and Sinema who would like screw it up. You know, so who knows?
I say that if you get another Manchin of Sinema, you need to use like start borrowing Putin style tactics. You know, what we did with Perosian. I'm like, oh yeah, you're not gonna do it. Well, your family. You know, it's like you value your family.
I'm not sure I'd go quite that far.
Like, listen, I am right now at a point where this is like,
if you're willing to do that, you might as well just kidnap, you know, Clarence Thomas's family right now. Do that instead. I bet. Just to be clear for anybody in the FBI listening, I am joking. I am not actually suggesting anybody do anything of that sort. It would be disastrous and bad. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Go. Continue.
Obviously exaggerating, but you need to be as aggressive as possible with this kind of people that are not with the program.
Well, I was listening to somebody. God, I wish I could. People have done a number of different proposals on exactly what to do with the Supreme Court. People have talked about term limits for them. People have talked about like just every president automatically gets one nomination per year and the court ends up whatever size it ends up. People have talked about, you know, the just making it 13 to match the number of circuits. The one proposal I listened to it was either last night or earlier this morning, was somebody suggesting we actually make it much bigger. Mm-hmm. I forget the exact number he gave, but it was like closer to 30. And the reason he said that was that there are circuit courts that are that big. It was like 27 or 30 or something like that. It was an odd number that was in that range. Because there are circuit courts that are that big. They manage just fine, but it's also big enough that not every justice sits on every case. Instead, they do the thing where they pick three random justices to hear any particular case. And then after those three rule, the whole court can potentially, by majority vote, decide to override and do it an in-bank hearing. But by default, it just goes to this randomly selected group of three. And he gave two reasons for this. One is that if you had a big court and you need like 15 justices to agree, that even if you've got a bunch of conservative justices amongst that group or a bunch of super liberals, to get 15 anybody to agree, you have to somewhat moderate what you're doing because you need all of those people to come together. And it's just harder to get 15 people together than it is to get five people together.
True.
That was number one. Second, the randomly selected panels of three mean that when they're not randomly selected till after you've submitted your case, which means you wouldn't know. Are you going to get three conservatives, three liberals, three moderates? You don't know when you make your case. So you have to pitch the case more moderately to begin with because you don't know which judges you're going to get.
Yes.
And I thought that was a good idea. Some combination of all these things. It's just like the let's fix redistricting, not by a redistricting law, but make the House of Representatives 1,000 people. You know, you could fix it that way too. You know, because basically the more districts you have, the less meaning, the harder it is to make really bad redistricting schemes. But you could do a lot of this. But again, it all comes down to willpower and the willingness to actually just go in there, scorch earth, say day one, we have to do SCOTUS. And the reason you have to do SCOTUS day one before you do anything else is otherwise they're just going to declare anything you do unconstitutional. So you have to start there. But anyway, the other big thing they did, and I shouldn't say the other, like they've done a bunch of significant things this term, but the other thing this week that is worth mentioning is they ruled on the president's ability to fire people at independent agencies. So ever since the early 20th century, we've had a notion of Congress creating independent agencies that are intentionally isolated from the politics of the moment. They generally are run by commissioners and boards that have terms that are longer than a presidential term and are staggered so that you've got members appointed by various different presidents. And the design was that the president, while they could still fire them, would need a good reason. And basically, between the combination of several cases they heard, Supreme Court decided, no, president can fire whoever they want for whatever reason, except the Fed. They carved out an exception for the Federal Reserve. Yep. But for everything else, the president can do whatever they want, which means that you basically are destroying the idea of independent agencies that can operate without being subject to the day-to-day whims of the president. And the notion is these are congressionally created agencies. They're supposed to be run in a specific way. The argument of the Supreme Court is, well, no, they have to be subject to the president because if they're not subject to the president, they're not subject to the people, and that's not how we do things in democracies.
I don't understand that argument. What do you? It's like he's talking like the representatives aren't elected, like our legislature's not elected. They are subject to the people. I don't. It's just, but they have made it that everything is now subject to one person.
Right.
I mean, because the legislature could pass something and then the president could just decide, ah, whatever.
Basically. I mean, and they've done a lot of rulings at this point that basically take laws
give the
that
president
Congress,
basically unlimited power.
Well, they've taken laws that the Congress has passed and said, well, yeah, but the president can kind of do what they want anyway, because the Congress can't restrict the executive branch in this way. And repeatedly over and over and over again, the theme is, yes, presidential power. And, you know, and the power of the court, of course, because I've seen people point out, and I agree with this wholeheartedly, and I think I've said this before on this show, they are not really giving this kind of unlimited power to the president. They are giving themselves the power to decide, because you goddamn know that if a Democratic president came in and tried to wield power in the same way that Donald Trump has been wielding power, they would find some reason to say, no, that's bullshit. They can't do that.
Most probably, yes.
You know,
didn't we see this already with student
with
debt?
Biden?
Yeah.
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 You've definitely seen that. And look, the other thing is, yeah. Again, a lot of these people claim to sort of be originalists and textualists and all this kind of stuff.
Blah, 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 blah.
If you actually look at the founding and the Constitutional Convention and stuff, I mean, the whole damn Constitution practically is designed to keep power out of the hands of a single individual.
Right.
It's all about balance of power and setting up, you know, and Article 1 was first for a reason. If you ask any of the founders, they would have thought of things as, you know, Congress runs
good
things.
Good news, Sam.
The president just does what Congress, like, they execute the laws.
Let's, I don't believe this, but as we talked about the Great American State Fair closes. The National Mall event
again
has shut
today?
Down temporarily due to triple-digit heat.
Ah, okay. Because this is not the first time. It's happened a couple times this week, right?
I don't recall, but this is the first time I've
well,
seen
you, it. You yeah, sent out a picture of them showing that it was closed for bad weather that had a misspelling of freedom on the picture.
Oh, yeah. But that one they said was thunderstorms. This
right.
is heat.
Oh, okay. It happens. You know, this is a really bad heat wave, but hot weather in D.C. in July shouldn't be a surprise anyway.
No,
you know,
I mean, I've sweat my balls off at D.C. in July. Let me tell you something. Oh, it's so humid. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to live in that area. Yeah, it's hot. Just as a comparison, by the way, right now it's 63 where I am on the West Coast. To me, I know 63 is like horribly cold for you, Yvonne, but to me, mid-60s, perfect. That's how the weather should always be. Like that. If I had to pick a temperature, the mid-60s would be it. Yeah, for outdoors. Inside, my thermostat is pegged at 70 year-round, but like outside, mid-60s is perfect. Yeah, so anyway, that was SCOTUS. One more newsy thing before. And we'll see. Mitch McConnell.
Is he dead?
I don't think he's dead, but I do think he's in the ICU on life support. And, you know, he's probably not conscious. The reports, the most recent reports, was that he was brought to the hospital after a 911 call when his staff found him unresponsive and he was revived by CPR. And the outcome in that case where someone is found already unresponsive and needing CPR, as opposed to someone acting immediately on seeing them collapse or whatever, of his age, you know, with an unknown amount of time he was down before he was revived, chances of full recovery are very small. You know, and so he no one from his team is giving a real update. You know, so we don't know. I think the people who are speculating that he's already dead and people just aren't saying, no, no. If he was actually dead, we would know. But they're not revealing his actual situation. So I suspect it's quite grave.
He could be a vegetable, like right now.
That might, who knows? Maybe. That it's not entirely impossible. People have also been, there's been a lot of misinformation flowing about, like, they want to keep him on life support until after a certain deadline so that the governor can't appoint a replacement and he goes and it has to wait till the next special election to get a replacement. Do. Sam from the future here. And I am about to contribute to that misinformation. Everything I'm about to say about the process for replacing Mitch McConnell in the next few minutes is wrong. Oops. So after I'm done, I'll explain. But yeah. Yeah. Oops. Do. But they're neglecting the fact that when the current Democratic governor of Kentucky was elected, right then, between the election and when he took office, as happened with a whole bunch of other states, the Republican legislature and the outgoing governor made sure to reduce that governor's power. And yep. One of the things they did was make sure that the Democratic governor could not appoint a Democratic senator. In fact, it works very similar to how things work here in Washington State for, you know, if folks remember, my wife Brandy ended up appointed to the state legislature. Even in the way that that works is also the way that Kentucky works. Basically, the Republican Party in Kentucky would give the governor the name of three candidates. The governor would get to pick between those three candidates, but he can't just go pick some random Democrat. He can't pick a Republican who is a Republican in name only and not in the traditional rhino sense, but who just became a Republican for convenience to be nominated. Can't do anything like that. He has to pick from names given to him by the Republican Party of Kentucky. So it's not like, you know, oh, we'll keep him in life support for months so that we can just jump straight to the special election because we can't let the Democrat pick somebody. Because, I mean, it's technically true, but the Democrat is constrained in who they can pick, even in that scenario. So it kind of doesn't make sense. Like, do. Okay, here's the real deal. So what I described was actually what Kentucky already had before Governor Beshear got into place. So Governor Beshear, a Democratic governor of Kentucky, already would not have been able to nominate a Republican. Or a Democrat. They would have been forced to nominate a Republican and a Republican that was chosen by the Republican Party. So they would give three choices and he'd have to pick from them. That's how it was before. When Governor Beshear got elected, what they changed it to, or specifically, I guess they changed the law in 2024. Yes, new law on vacancies in 2024, which basically made it so the governor couldn't replace a Senate vacancy at all. They would have to wait for a special election. And so the controversy on timing right now that people are talking about is actually whether you have a special election at all or whether you wait to the next regular election. And apparently there is a deadline related to that coming up in like 5 weeks or something. Like, yeah, I believe it's at the beginning of August. So if Mitch McConnell dies or leaves office in some other way in the next few weeks, then there will be a special election followed by a regular election. Whereas if he makes it past that, then there'll just be a regular election and you won't have that interim short-term senator in between. So that's apparently the thing. And there's some dynamics and they assume, like, you know, whether Thomas Massie would be in play and whether that would be different in the dynamics for a special election versus a real election versus a whatever. Anyway, so there is some, like, would they play around with when to pull the plug if he's in a situation where pulling the plug is a possibility because he's already brain dead or whatever, simply to manipulate what kind of election and what timing of that election would be. And I've seen some people comment that Mitch McConnell would love that. That's exactly the kind of like game playing he always liked to do. So anyway, that is the clarification. Sorry for the misinformation. And yeah, back to the show. Do. To, you know, if he's in, but having said that, he may linger quite a while in whatever state he's in. And who the hell knows? Maybe all these rumors are wrong. He's actually well on the way to recovery and he'll show up next week. But let's be honest. He hasn't been looking good for the last year anyway. Maybe 2 years. You know, Mitch McConnell has...
Well, yeah, he's been freezing and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
He's been freezing. He's been falling. He's been less coherent. You know, we had the same kind of thing with Dianne Feinstein on the Democratic side where, you know, somebody who clearly was in physical and mental decline just would not resign and was hanging on. Mitch McConnell had announced he's not running again. There are people actively running to replace him right now. You know, so I don't know, but like, he was not in good shape anyway. The reports are he had a heart attack and he was actually in arrest and that he had to be revived and he was down for an unknown amount of time. All of these things are not pointing towards a good outcome for him. It's just, I don't know how long until we know, but, and to be honest, since he stepped down as majority leader, Mitch McConnell has been one of the few Republican votes willing to regularly go against Donald Trump. You know,
that doesn't redeem him to me in any way. Shape,
oh, back to the McNamara idea.
Yeah, yes. I don't think that he did a fucking mea culpa about any of the fucking. Listen, he is the reason why the Supreme Court is the way it is right now.
Yes. He absolutely is. It was his major project for most of his time in the Senate was let's do SCOTUS. I mean, and certainly his time as majority leader.
Yeah.
And he came up with the hardball techniques that kept Obama from nominating somebody
right
to replace Scalia, which would have made a huge difference.
Enormous difference.
Because it wouldn't have just been replace a liberal with another liberal. It would have been replace a conservative with a liberal. In the same way that Trump got to replace a liberal with a conservative and made a huge difference.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, he did all that. And I'd say the other thing is he clearly, after January 6th, knew that what Trump had done was overboard, and all reports were he was considering voting for the impeachment in the trial. And if he had done so, there might have been others who had gone. They might have. I mean, the impeachment trial was after Donald Trump had actually left office. But if McConnell had at that time voted for it and encouraged his other people to do so too, they may well have impeached him, in which case he could have been barred from running again. And we could have avoided the second term entirely. Mitch McConnell could have, and we could have still, by the way, we could have still had a Republican president, just not Donald Trump. You know, you never know. But McConnell decided instead to go with a line of, A, it's too late. He's not president anymore. There's no point in doing this. And if he was guilty of stuff, and I think he was, he gave a speech that pretty much said this, the courts should take care of it. He should be prosecuted and indicted and convicted through the court system. And of course, we all know what ended up happening with that. So anyway. So you want to hit anything else or should we wrap it up a little early?
Let's wrap it up.
Okay. You know, so yeah. I got Europeans and AC on my list. So,
yeah.
Europeans don't like AC, but are starting
Greek
and Centre.
Actually, there was a whole bunch of articles talking about how Europeans came over here like during this heat wave and during the AC, and they were like, oh my God, this is so nice.
Well, we didn't talk about a World Cup thing. One of the themes has been all these Europeans coming and not just AC, but like, looking at Walmart, looking at the restaurants, looking at this, looking at, you know.
Look, it's just different. I mean, I go over there and you get impressed by so many of the things that they have as well. I think it's, you know, a lot of people are visiting and they're getting to experience certain things for the first time and they like those. But, you know, like everything, there's pluses and minuses to all of these things. So,
yeah. And anyway, I have been amused. But first of all, watching the Europeans in the U.S. for the World Cup, a lot of them have been amusing to watch. But also on this AC thing, you know, seeing videos on TikTok, both of, you know, Europeans trying to justify why it's better without AC, then other Europeans saying, fuck this, I'm trying to get an AC and I can't because they're all sold out and I desperately want one because it's so damn hot. And then Americans chastising and laughing at them, saying, why the hell don't you already have AC? Are you guys crazy? And other Europeans trying to justify that back to the Americans. It's just been an amusing dialogue back and forth of the whole thing. Anyway, if you haven't seen some of this,
and definitely,
go
look,
seek it
that
out.
Is, that is one thing that is for sure. I mean, I've seen, look, there have been people doing all these runs on buying air conditioners because of the heat wave. Look, I understand the concern with energy consumption, but also at the same time, it all depends on what the power source is. I mean, like, you go to a place like France where most of their power is like nuclear, for God's sakes. Not exactly like, you know, okay, I don't, you know, you're not really contributing to global warming by plugging into the air conditioners. However, the one thing that they've got is that the grid, how much, you know, it's getting overtaxed as well. And that's happening also.
And also in some European countries, it depends on the country, there are actually currently laws that really prohibit where and when and how you can do this and what kind of installations are okay.
In most places, the problem isn't so much the laws. It's just that the buildings were not made to have air conditioners.
Well,
so, you know, There's
a difference between retrofit the whole thing for central air, right, versus having a window unit. And I did, the shape of the windows is different than most window units are made,
right,
for, but you can get around that too, versus the portable units where you have to stick a hose out and then do the thing. And there,
right,
but there are ways to work around all this if you want to. And anyway, the one other thing I just thought of, you know, we mentioned how I am not a sports person. I don't follow sports at all. But one thing that I have been noting recently, again, because it showed up a lot on my TikTok feed, that I've been sort of following in the background, is this woman who's been rowing from California to Hawaii. Have you been following this at all, Yvonne?
No.
So there's this woman, her intention on leaving California was to be the first woman to row solo from California to Hawaii. Okay. She's due to arrive there. Like, and she may have arrived while we were recording any moment now. She's due to arrive in Hawaii today, but not only has she succeeded in being the first woman to do this row solo, she is also breaking the record for not only the women's record for this row, I guess, of people who aren't solo as well. I'm not sure about that. But also she's breaking the men's record by a lot. Like, the previous record for rowing from California to Hawaii was like 60 days. She's making it at like 42 or something. So like, and apparently only like 12 people have ever done this. But like, anyway, she's apparently breaking the record. And she's been, and the reason I've been seeing this on TikTok is, of course, this is like, she's not like some dinky little rowboat. She's got like a nice, fully kitted out rowboat. Well, whatever you call the damn thing. But anyway, it's got full internet, whatever. And she's been posting like daily updates on TikTok, sometimes more than one a day, from the middle of the Pacific Ocean, of her journey as she goes along. And anyway, she's about to get there, or has gotten there in the last few minutes, I don't know. And she's apparently not only beaten the women's record, not only beaten the men's record, but she's crushed the men's record by a significant margin over the previous record. So anyway,
excellent.
I thought that was worth noting. Of course, you know, she looks very sunburnt at this point.
No shit.
Anyway.
I can see how that could be a problem.
That's all I got. So shall we say goodbye?
Well, one thing.
You got one more thing,
one newsy, yeah. Well, one newsy item, my newsy item. Not things that we didn't discuss. Somebody got their Trump phone finally.
Oh, yeah. I've been watching a bunch of tech YouTubers start to get those over the last couple of weeks. And I guess they're slowly coming out. So, yeah.
Apparently, I finally got my Trump phone. It's gold, tacky, and had a tiny scratch right out of the box.
Yes.
So it already came pre-scratched for you. It doesn't really look very gold.
It just looks yellow. It's definitely yellow.
Yeah, it's not gold. My phone came with a free Trump mobile SIM, even though I've not signed up to the company's mobile plan, plus an A4 quick start guide that was quite clearly printed on a standard office printer. Inside the box, there is a SIM tool, clear plastic case, charger, gold and black braided USB-C cable that feels remarkably cheap. Then you get a second set of instructions, this time with a tiny booklet that covers everything from initial setup to how to make a phone call, Sam, or take a photo with a camera.
Very nice. Yeah. Like I said, a few tech YouTubers have been getting them over the last couple of weeks. This was your article with the people at The Verge got it.
Yeah. And he has not been able to use it, but here's the thing. He's been able to make calls, but no data connectivity.
Yeah. Well, he was also in Europe. So maybe he pointed out maybe it really is intended as a US only phone. It would be on brand. But yeah, so far, none of the initial impressions that I've heard, I haven't watched a full review. I'm not sure I'm ever going to. But of the initial impressions I've heard, all of them are like, this is kind of a mediocre, crap budget phone. Of course, it didn't have a budget price tag, I don't think, but it's a rebranded standard Android, cheap Android, not flagship Android.
Cheap Android,
type
yes.
Phone.
Very critical. It's definitely not a high quality item.
Yeah. And there are, you know, this is not an iPhone versus Android thing. There are like high quality flagship Android phones. This just isn't one of them. And of course, they at one point changed their whole promise that it would be fully made in the USA. That's long gone. It's long gone. So it is what it is. I'm sure yours will arrive any moment now, Yvonne.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I ordered two of them.
Of course.
I mean, you'll be getting yours soon.
Two. Oh, one for me.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I know. I know you were waiting for it.
I was. Okay, let's wrap it up. Thanks for listening for another episode of Curmudgeon's Corner. Go to our website, curmudgeons-corner.com. Yeah, it's a thing. You can go there, see all the ways to contact us, see all our old episodes, listen to our old episodes, read some of the transcripts. The last couple of years have had transcripts. Before that, you're out of luck, sorry. And yeah. What else? What else could I say about? Oh yeah, go to our Patreon, give us money. At various levels, you can see. Well, no, am I confusing myself? At various levels, we'll mention you on the show. We will ring a bell. We will send you a postcard. We will send you a mug. All that sort of thing. At $2 a month or more, or if you ask nicely, and we like you, we will let you. We will invite you to our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, where throughout the week, Yvonne and I and others are chatting and sharing links and all this kind of stuff. So in a second, I'm going to ask Yvonne, for something from the Slack that would be enticing that we have not mentioned on the show. But I want to note, just within the last couple of weeks, like apparently Slack has updated their Slack bot to be like a full AI chat bot, which it wasn't before.
No.
And we have not experimented with it at all.
I have, but like, I haven't.
But apparently it could do things like I could ask Slackbot, look at the conversation on the Slack in the last week and give me something to highlight. And it would do it instead of me asking Yvonne. And I don't know if I can let it, there might be a way to make it participate in our chats as well. I'm not sure if I'd like that or not, but you know, anyway, they've upgraded Slackbot and it can do stuff now. Well, it could always do stuff, but it was much more limited. Apparently it's less limited now. Yvonne is scowling. Anyway, Yvonne, we can have Slackbot do this for us next week, maybe. But in the meantime, maybe. What's your pick?
But that was my pick, the gold phone.
Oh, that was your gold. Well, I always ask for your pick after the
thing. I thought you just gave it. You said we're going to be done. And I'm like, wait, no.
Well, that means it's time for me to do my intro. When I say, well, shall we wrap it up? It means I go to the intro and then we do this. Okay, the Slack thing. Well, not now, maybe.
All right, now I got to do another thing. Okay, fine.
Or you could ask Slack.
Fine. But let me see. Well, there are a few things. Let me see. I'll go with Hunter Biden mockingly nominates Donald Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize for ending the same war with Iran 38 times.
Very good.
Yeah, that would be hilarious, I guess. If, you know, I wonder if he'll accept the nomination from Hunter. I actually think that he would accept it even from Hunter because he's so desperate for that damn prize.
Well, he already has the FIFA Peace Prize, so
correct. Yes, we already gave him.
That's better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and he's got the plane.
He's got the plane. The peace.
Which somebody noticed was stocked with the Qatari plane at shelves with books, but they weren't real books. They just said books on them.
Okay, so I did ask Slackbot. My prompt was, what was the most interesting and exciting thing discussed on the Slack in the last 7 days that might make someone new want to join? And of course, it couldn't follow instructions. It didn't give me one item. It gave me four. Okay.
All right, we'll pick the first one.
I'll give you. Yeah, we can do these. We can do all four. They're short. Number one, the highlight of the week was Ed sharing a vivid real-time travelogue from a cruise through the Prince Christian Sound. Their ship was literally the first to complete the transit of the year. A previous vessel had to turn back due to icebergs.
Oh, yeah. And that was like this week. Okay, I forgot that it was this week.
Mountain ranges, glaciers, wildlife, a fancy Viking chef table dinner, and a blessed 18 hours with almost no news. A genuine gem of a post. That was its number one choice. Number two, AOC for president. A lively debate broke out in the general channel about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez potentially running for president. Yvonne Beau was pretty enthusiastic. I wouldn't hesitate to vote for her. She is so damn sharp. The discussion touched on whether she should build more Senate experience first versus striking while the iron is hot. Even Slackbot had opinions about the language used. Slackbot jumped in and yelled at you for swearing or something.
Yeah, well. That's
number three, big picture historical analysis. Ed again. Ed dropped a thoughtful post referencing Neil Howe's cyclical theory of history. The idea that we may be in a chaotic fourth turning that historically predates a period of growth and democratic renewal. The parallel to today's rise of young progressive politicians made for a genuinely interesting read. And finally, number four, DOJ versus Epstein files. Some eyebrow-raising news was shared this morning, the DOJ declining to turn over additional Epstein files despite a federal judge's order, the kind of thing that tends to spark strong reactions. And then it summarizes. In short, Curmudgeon's Corner is a place for people who like sharp political commentary, global current events, and the occasional adventure story, with a refreshingly unfiltered tone. There you go. And with that, we will go away and I will do other things for the rest of today. Tomorrow I'm doing a parade, I'm doing fireworks, I'm doing all the traditional 4th of July stuff, and then I'll probably put the show out actually on Sunday. We'll see. Maybe I'll get to it early. I don't know. Probably not. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, stay safe. Oh, and for any of you out there, this won't go out until after the 4th is over, so I'll put it into retrospective. I hope you weren't stupid enough to light off your own fireworks and destroy your hands. Or your lives.
Or your eyes.
Or your eyes. Yeah, absolutely. I hope you went to a professional show and watched it and had fun. And I understand setting off your own is fun. I did it many, many years ago, but so many people get badly hurt. It's just a bad idea. Just go see the professional ones. Or I guess it's too late now. Again, hope you didn't die. Hope you didn't mangle yourself. Okay, here we go. Bye, folks. Say goodbye, Yvonne.
Bye.
Okay, and hitting stop, Yvonne. Have a good rest of your day. Thanks for doing this a day early.
All right, let's do this. Okay.